Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice. The mission of the Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome to the Reasonable Voices radio show. My guest today, I'm really excited about talking to because he's up to some big things. His name is Drew Gallagher. And Drew is the Virginia campus organizer for the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. Now, that's a mouthful, Drew, but before we start talking about it, how are you?
I'm good, Marcello. Thanks for having me on. How are you doing today?
I'm great, and it's good to talk to you again. I hope we're going to reach a lot of people today with the important message. Now, I know your title says Virginia campus organizer, but sounds like, are you a rabble-rouser?
I'm not a rabble-rouser. I'm purely out there, you know, engaging with our young people and encouraging them to, you know, exercise their political voice.
Yes.
And helping create the clean energy future that we all know we need.
You know, and it's so appropriate. You know, I was joking, of course, but the thing is, I often write about it's you guys. It's the students in just a graduate school and undergrad who are going to reap what has been sown by the people with gray hair. I mean, whatever happens to the earth, the resources of the earth, the climate, the air we breathe, it's you guys who have to handle it. And I think you need to start while, as you are doing right now, so make everyone aware that it's a huge political problem and make the people who cause the problem be part of the solution. I guess that's what I'm saying. But let's not limit you. Even though your title is Virginia Campus Organizer, you actually do a great deal in the Mid-Atlantic area, including Maryland and D.C., yes?
Yeah, so our organization is a grassroots nonprofit. We operate in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. Really pushing a climate change themed message here of, you know, we've got to start implementing policies and switching to this renewable future to get our greenhouse gas emissions under control so that we can keep this planet safe for future generations and for ourselves, because we're starting to see the effects of climate change now.
Exactly.
It's no longer just a future problem.
You know, speaking of which, we have problems with the Chesapeake Bay pollution, and we hear all the time about Florida, the Gulf, and the ocean rising on Florida shores. And even when I lived in Florida, the storms were getting worse, and I haven't lived there in a good while. So, but one of the things is that we're actually having water rising in Virginia at Hampton Roads, yes?
Oh, absolutely. Hampton Roads, Virginia's most populous region in our state, is the second most vulnerable place in the country to sea level rise, second only to New Orleans.
Wow.
We've seen a foot of sea level rise in the past 80 years and are projected for 3 to 5 more feet within the next 50 years. So it is a huge problem and a major economic hub for the state and major population center. We've got to start doing something about this problem, or it's going to be underwater by 2050.
Oh, my heavens. Tell us who don't know. I know I've been to Hampton Roads at some point, but where exactly does it sort of fit in the Commonwealth of Virginia geographically?
Sure. So Hampton Roads is kind of a nomer for a collection of cities and communities down in the Tidewater region of Virginia. In the southeast, it includes cities like Hampton, Norfolk, Virginia Beach. And it's also home to Naval Station Norfolk, the largest naval base in the world.
Ah, yes. That's why I know about it. And it is low country there. So underwater by 2050. Well, let's talk about what you've done recently. You know, I always ask that kind of question. I know you were involved with a team of students from Virginia campuses, the University of Virginia, VCU, I believe, too, and others, who bicycled across the Commonwealth, about 350 miles. And what were they all about? Tell us about that.
Sure. So that was the Atlantic Coast Pipeline Resistance Ride, which was essentially an action put on by, you know, a group of students from across the state, really to draw attention to the proposed Atlantic Coast Pipeline, which is a huge fracked gas pipeline proposed by Dominion Resources, mm-hmm. Our state's largest utility. It would come from West Virginia through Virginia, roughly paralleling I-64. Mm-hmm. And once it gets down to the coast, it would have a spur that would spur off to Chesapeake, Virginia, and then the pipeline would carry on into North Carolina. It'd be about 550 miles of pipeline altogether, and 42 inches diameter, which is pretty huge. It's one of the largest scale pipelines you can build.
Wow. I know people who live in Nelson County and who are very upset about this, but your bicycle riders, or bicyclists, actually met with people along the way who were affected. And they were, tell us one or two of those stories, because people had quite some surprising things. I think there was a lady who saved horses that were in danger, and the idea that a pipeline would be coming onto the land and turning up the earth and upsetting these horses who have already been traumatized was of great concern to her. Do you have any other stories like that, why people are so concerned about a pipeline?
Yeah, absolutely. And, that was really kind of the point of what this ride was to be able to go back to our own communities and share these stories so that we can amplify the voices of homeowners that are going to be directly impacted by the pipeline. Mm. We were fortunate enough to stay with some community members who operate a wonderful bed and breakfast out in Augusta County, like beautifully scenic. The pipeline is going to come, right across their property. They took us out and walked the land, and the pipeline itself is going to have a 125-foot easement that you can't use anymore, which is just going to be total clear cut for your property. And how is that going to affect if people want to come and stay at your bed and breakfast if you've got pipeline construction going outside 500 feet from your home?
And then even after it's completed, if it goes through, you're saying that a certain distance on either side of it is really a do not enter area for the owner of the land?
Yeah, so there is a permanent easement created on top of the pipeline where they keep it clear cut. You're not allowed to, say if you're a farmer, you cannot drive heavy machinery over the land. So, if the pipeline bisects your land, you may be unable to get your tractor, per se, across to the other side of your land for harvest or for planting. Okay. It really, really changes a lot of what you can do with, your own property.
I'm so glad you told us this, because I'm one of those city boys from New York City, and I'm concerned more about trains carrying oil and chemicals than pipelines. But when you explain it, it isn't just they dig a hole and then they cover it up and go away and all's well, but you really lose the land forever, whatever that piece is. And as you say, if you are a farmer, I may be a city boy, but my grandparents were big farmers, huge farmers, and I can just imagine what they would have been doing and saying if this was coming through their property. That's just a piece of the a problem that I didn't think of, because I don't live, you know, that life, that rural life. But so this is important. But what can we say to the doubters? What do we say to them that makes them realize, as political an issue this is, it isn't just political, it's economic, yes?
Absolutely. You know, I think the thing is, a lot of people, everyone's got their own reason for why they may be, you know, refusing to accept or take a look at the, you know, pretty overwhelming consensus of evidence that this is a problem. It is man-made, and we urgently need to do something about it. I think it is our job to, you know, really listen to where people are coming from,
mm-hmm.
hear what their concerns are, what their reason for not really believing what science is saying, and, you know, just try and meet them halfway and really get at the heart of what's causing that, you know, lapse in communication.
You know, I agree with you, Drew. I try my best to not criticize people who disagree with me, even on all the stuff that comes on social media. If all you want to do is criticize someone who I disagree with too, then I'm not interested in being a part of that conversation. But I wonder, as you say, I mean, we need to bridge the gap, there's no question. But what, I don't know what the motivation is. Just, I don't believe the scientists? I mean, it seems, there must be something more than that. You have any
sure.
thoughts without us getting into trouble?
I would be as bold to say as, you know, I personally feel that a lot of politicians that may doubt the existence of climate change
uh-huh.
are also probably receiving some pretty hefty campaign contributions from the companies that would be impacted the most financially if there were some significant legislation passed to curb greenhouse gases.
Oh.
You know, we've got to remember that this has been a decades long, you know, misinformation campaign by some of the wealthiest companies in the entire world, producing pretty much bunk science and distributing that. And we've really got to, you know, we're up against, you know, the most financially powerful industry in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a lot of time to kind of spread that message, you know, and I think we're starting to see the turning of the tide, though. There's some pretty interesting polling numbers coming out of the Yale Center for Climate Change Communication that, you know, a majority of Americans now believe that climate change is happening, that we are the cause of it and that we need to do something about it. Whereas even, you know, as recently as like 2007 to 2010, those numbers were switched. So we're seeing good progress in communication. People are coming around.
Well, I know the public has been, in general, regardless of one's political position or economic level, the public has been misdirected, let's put it that way. And when you realize, I think, when an American realizes someone's not telling them the truth so that someone can gain from it economically, they're not going to respond to that in a very positive way. But another issue is job creation. I mean, oil companies, I don't know what they're doing about job creation, because when you put in a pipeline, be it Keystone or whatever, the jobs are temporary. But when we talk about, or anyone talks about renewable energy, that's an entirely new, ever-growing. I mean, clearly it's growing regardless of what the oil companies do and gas companies do with pipelines. But if renewable energy is adopted more and more, and it is in some places that should shame us into getting into it, but doesn't that create jobs, renewable energy?
Absolutely. The idea that, you know, the government telling people to switch over to renewable energy would kill jobs is so far off the mark.
Hmm.
The transition to a renewable economy has the potential to be the biggest shot in the arm for our economy ever. I mean, you know, when we look at fossil fuel industries, these are mature industries. They,
yes.
You know, every dollar you invest gives you less of a return than when you invest it into, you know, growth industries like efficiency, solar, and wind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at least here in Virginia, we are really missing the mark on that as a strong growth opportunity, whereas there are some other states in the Mid-Atlantic that have chosen to embrace fostering a growing solar industry, and it's seen incredible results in terms of employment, investment, and total electricity generated from renewables. It's really, really an incredible opportunity that some states are missing out on.
Are you talking about Maryland specifically or some other area?
Maryland has been doing a great job. North Carolina and New Jersey as well are also, you know, three states that I look to on in the East Coast that have, really made incredibly promising steps and, you know, are ranking within the top 10 nationally of states that are generating power from solar, you know, even when states like Arizona and New Mexico might, you know, be seen as better options. We're really leading the charge.
That's impressive. Maryland, New Jersey, North Carolina, that's impressive. But I wonder do you think owners of fossil fuel corporations are, not that I think this is a good thing, but at least if they were trying to buy their way into, invest in solar renewable energy, then sort of fade out the fossil fuel part of their corporation, so that they then, even if that would be self-serving, it would seem to me that would be at least a smart reaction. Do they really think fossil fuels will be around forever?
Marshall, I am often baffled by that too, because, you know, I know that the people running these companies are very smart
yes.
and highly talented.
Yes.
You know, but whereas some utilities have chosen to look to the future and really start amping up their renewable generating capacity, at least here in Virginia, that has not been the case. Our state's largest utility, Dominion Virginia Power, is slated to invest about $18 billion over the next 6 years, and $700 million of that is in solar. To give you an idea of kind of how tiny that is, they're investing $500 million in security for their other fossil fuel plants, because they are, you know, high valued targets, if you will, for, you know, the potential of a terrorist attack.
Sure.
You know, that's how much they need to spend to protect this infrastructure. You know, why aren't we putting that money into solar or wind farms, which, you know, are less volatile if they were to be attacked?
Yes, it is mind-boggling. It really is. It sounds, as you say, these are not stupid people. They've built empires. You would think looking toward the future would be a natural choice. I also think, you know, I often wonder which this money, these payoffs, are they one way or another, even if it's not actually cold cash, they are a two-way street between the politicians and the corporate fossil fuel owners and CEOs, etc., so that it isn't just giving money to a political campaign, but then what does that politician do for you once elected? What are your thoughts as we take us out on that? We'll have to end this segment pretty soon. That's a hot item. We may pick it up on the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think Virginia has one of the best examples of what you get when you make significant contributions. Dominion Virginia Power, as I mentioned earlier, our state's largest regulated utility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are regulated by the state.
Mm-hmm.
Also happens to be the largest campaign contributor in Virginia, aside from the Democratic and Republican parties, to
mm-hmm.
both sides of the aisle. Dominion does not discriminate. Every legislator in the Virginia General Assembly has taken money from Dominion on both sides of the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in terms of what that's gotten them, I think a Washington Post headline said it the best, that every bill Dominion opposed this past General Assembly session was defeated. Yeah, so if we're looking for what the serious contributions get you, you know, it seems to be in Virginia that Dominion has gotten to kind of run the table on energy policy.
Okay, well, that's a cliffhanger for sure. We're going to take a break. I'm speaking with Drew Gallagher, my guest today, and Drew is the Virginia campus organizer for the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, which is everywhere and trying to save the land and the water and the air, well, the planet. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Back in 2000, Kenneth Lonergan gave us the indie classic You Can Count on Me. He returned to the screen in 2005 with Margaret, but it was tied up with legal wrangling and editing battles that left it orphaned and hidden for over 6 years. Like its birth, Margaret is a complex film, a coming-of-age story that fervently avoids any trite or easy path. Anna Paquin plays Lisa Cohen, a privileged, naive young teen, in her own mind sophisticated and prescient. She manipulates those around her by using all the weapons of emerging womanhood. With adolescent self-assurance, she fervently debates and over-dramatizes the world's problems, putting herself at center stage. Lisa witnesses a horrific bus pedestrian accident, one of the most memorable and affecting of on-screen random deaths. She shares some guilt with the bus driver and shares in the cover-up as well. This is the crowbar that pries open the door to adult realization. The world is not fair. It is not simple, and in these times of accelerated change, consequences are unpredictable. In Margaret, little truths of human nature are revealed with startling insight, and we watch again just how painful pubescence can be in our complex world. Margaret, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices radio show. My guest this afternoon is Drew Gallagher, who is the Virginia campus organizer for the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. And we've been talking about basically what Drew is doing every time he answers my question, and I'm included in this. He's educating us about the real deal with what's going on with our climate and, air, water, earth. And it's and to understand that fossil fuel companies are equal employment opportunity, folks, because they go after all political parties and the political candidates, and they give them all a lot of money, and that money comes with strings attached. Is that too far to say, Drew?
I would just point to the historical data on that one and let people conclude for themselves.
Okay. All right. I hear you. All right. Well, we ended talking about where things are going with the future, and the future is renewable energy, and renewable energy comes in many forms. I wonder, because I threw out, because it says Chesapeake Climate Action Network, are you guys involved at all with the Chesapeake Bay and the pollution problem there? I'm just curious.
The Chesapeake NOMA in our name is more to signify the region.
Uh-huh.
We don't do direct work with the Bay itself, as our number one issue is climate change in our region. So, yeah, subsequently, we help the Bay because we think fighting climate change helps everything.
Yes.
But that is not our direct line of work.
Gotcha. Well, you're doing great things in any case. Now, I think we touched on this, but maybe we can hit it again. The job opportunities, the economic opportunities that Virginia in particular is losing out on. Have we said enough about that? Because that sounds like, it would seem to me, no matter what your political point of view, every politician is going jobs, jobs, jobs. That's all they say. That was quite a mantra in the last election. And I just wonder how we can make clear to be, how do we prove? That's what I'm after. How do we prove to someone? Do you have any information, any statistics, data, whatever, that says to the American citizen out there trying to figure out how to be employed, that renewable energy is the future of job security, at least part of it, yes?
Yeah, I want to read off some pretty staggering numbers that I think highlight this point pretty well.
Okay.
Last year in Virginia, we invested $15 million in solar installation.
Wow.
Last year, North Carolina invested $652 million in solar installation.
Uh-huh.
Their solar industry is now employing about 5,600 people. Uh-huh. Virginia employs about 1,000. New Jersey, little old New Jersey, even farther north with less sunlight than we get, employs 7,200 people and is third in the nation in terms of total solar, investing $600 million last year. You know, these are huge investment opportunities that some states are taking advantage of to provide high-paying, secure, good jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Some states, such as Virginia, are really just falling behind on.
So, those are the numbers. And it just seems then that it is a corporate and political alliance that is holding back or preventing in some way a booming job market in the Commonwealth of Virginia, at least. I mean, even if we just talk about Virginia, I doubt that we stand alone in this predicament, but in the Mid-Atlantic area on the East Coast, we seem to be, I mean, is that what you're saying? We are the ones who are falling further and further behind?
Yeah, I mean, if you look north to Maryland or south to North Carolina, both of their solar sectors and renewable sectors in general have just shot off, and that's because, their government and elected officials have really seen these opportunities and put good policies in place that really spur and incentivize creation of these industries.
Hmm.
One such example would be a renewable portfolio standard,
uh-huh,
which essentially says X percentage of your electricity needs to come from renewables. Here in Virginia, we have a voluntary renewable portfolio standard. We see that usually when companies have the choice of doing something versus being forced to do it, they're going to choose to take the easy way out and not do it.
Hmm. Well, we talk about this and what's going on, and money seems to be the driving thing, and you guys are the David against several Goliaths. I wonder, though, maybe we should mention that people are worked up about Keystone, and of course, though, my friends out in Nelson County, Virginia, are concerned about the pipeline we're talking about, the gas pipeline. And all the people you met and the students met on the bike ride, the 350-mile bike ride to draw attention and get some publicity to the landowners. But this isn't the only pipeline that is under construction in Virginia. Is that correct? At the same time?
Yeah, absolutely. Currently, there are three proposed pipelines on the table for Virginia. None of them have broken ground yet. They're still in the review process from FERC, that's the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
Uh-huh.
They're the ones that kind of greenlight all interstate energy projects. All of these pipelines would be coming from West Virginia and cutting through Virginia. Each one of them is slated to carry more natural gas than Virginia currently uses in a year. Each one of them on their own.
Wow.
And I do not personally see our natural gas consumption quadrupling within the next 3 to 4 years. Yeah, so there's a lot of fears that this gas is going to be primarily used to export to countries such as India and Japan. And aren't truly in the sphere of the public good, such as the companies are claiming.
So, as I've said many times, mostly I say it so I hear myself say it and try to stick to it. I'm trying not to be biased or even overly critical, but it seems to me if you're building something that is three times what the American citizen needs in a given state, then you're not really building it for them. You're building it for some other reason. Is that...
Companies have been mass is going to be exported or not. From where I sit, I think the pieces are in place that that's what's going to be happening within the next few years. A reason I feel that way is that CCAN has spent the past year working to stop the Cove Point natural gas liquefaction export plant up in Maryland. It's a $4 billion project being built by what they did, our largest utility, Dominion Resources, to export natural gas. It is the only facility of its kind in the world to be located in a residential community with thousands of homes in a mile radius of the facility.
Oh, my goodness.
These plants are huge. Liquefying natural gas is a pretty intensive process. Releases millions of tons of CO2 and harmful pollutants.
Yes.
You know, but then so FERC actually approved Dominion's ability to build that project. So we are now suing FERC over we're claiming that they unlawfully approved that project and that the review was flawed, and we believe it to be illegal. But again, from where I see it, we now have this proposed export facility being built on the East Coast, three proposed pipelines cutting through Virginia that all carry more gas than we can use. And they're saying that the gas is for export, but, you know, where is it going to go? I think in 2 years from now, we might see, an application to change the gas over to export that was originally supposed to only be used domestically.
So they are thinking of the future, just not ours. Okay. Well, like we said earlier, these are smart people, and we can't really... We're trying not to judge them, and we're trying at the same time trying to understand their motivation. And the more we talk about it, the more I have guests like you on the show, and even the research for having this interview, I found things and I'm going, gee. And then when you come on and you confirm and verify even things I hadn't thought about. I mean, for instance, this huge gas plant, within a mile of a neighborhood and homes and children and whatever and schools. What are the likelihoods? I mean, it's not really a question that's rhetorical or even conjecture, really. It's, we have some evidence that, and I'm saying even in Virginia, that plants of energy plants, I won't name any names, but we all know, are not guaranteed to be 100% safe. So what, there's that question, and then I'm going to come back about the federal government, but what's the potential, what's the possibility of a disaster happening in a plant that's so close, and how it would affect, it seems silly to even answer, there are accidents happening every day, train wrecks and cranes falling in New York City, that we assume, oh no, this is safe, don't worry, trust me. What do you say, Drew?
You know, I don't want to speculate as to the percentage of mishaps that happen at these plants.
Yes.
I'm not exactly sure what that would be. I just think that we can look at kind of what these plants are doing and just think that, you know, that seems like it might be pretty high risk.
Yes.
For instance, natural gas, to liquefy it, you need to cool it down to -260°F. And, you know, that's just extremely volatile. You're dealing with billions of cubic feet of highly pressurized, highly volatile explosive gas. You know, within the distance of thousands of homes within 1 mile. To give you a comparison as to why we feel that this plant is so remarkable, and it's, I guess, lack of willingness to look at the human safety element is that the comparison I'll draw is there's a liquefied natural gas plant in Louisiana that has 12 homes within a 30-mile radius, and no one else lives within that 30-mile radius, whereas we have thousands of homes here within a 1-mile radius. You know, we've met with community members whose, if an accident were to happen, the only road in and out of their community would be done, and you would have no ability for first responders to get in there. And to help those people. So we think it's just, you know, too big of a risk that being externalized from these community members purely for, you know, export-driven profit.
You know, you don't need percentages conjectured or otherwise, Drew, when you give us facts like that. That is, that's irresponsible, to say the least, to do something like that. And to live and to expect the neighbors, the people, to live with the potential. I mean, that kind of stress is affects one's health, even if nothing else. But I want to get back for a moment for the federal government. We've been talking a lot about Dominion Resources sort of, let's say, influencing the Virginia General Assembly. For those who are the states hearing us, the Virginia General Assembly is our legislative branch of the state government. I wonder, you mentioned the federal government is in review. How much, because the federal government, for instance, stepped in finally and said, it's still controversial, but the Western Bypass through Albemarle County and bypassing Charlottesville to get to Lynchburg. And years, Dominion, Virginia, and others had been pushing for this, and suddenly the federal government said, no, this is not the way you spend your money. Now, part of that was a historical cemetery that had been there all along. It was on, I know people who make up such plans, you know, and it's not like the corporation didn't know that the cemetery was there, because it was on their very plans. It was shown, and they were going to plow right through it, but fortunately people found out, I think, preservation history folks that have been on the show and talked about that. But anyway, back to you and my question. What do you anticipate the federal government, who can anticipate what the federal government is going to do, but what the federal government is in a position to stop this? Is that what you've told us earlier?
Natural gas plant does reside within the hands of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission.
Mm-hmm.
That is a regulatory agency made up of five commissioners, mm-hmm. who are appointed. So they are pretty insulated from the political process.
Good.
Which can make it difficult for, you know, citizens to really make their voices heard at first, you know, which is why just 2 weeks ago, at the end of May, there was 9 days of direct action in front of FERC, with hundreds of people from across the country staging nonviolent protests out front.
Mm-hmm.
It's all intent to this. But these five people have the power to say, yes, this enormous behemoth of a natural gas,
yes,
plant, pipeline, compressor station, you know, can take your land that your family has lived on for hundreds of years.
And ignore the people outside saying, please don't do this.
Yeah, I mean, I think, back to Cove Point, the export facility, there were two women within the past few months that scaled cranes to sit in to try and stop construction. One of them was an elementary school teacher.
Mm.
You know, if people are going to these lengths to, you know, say, don't do this,
yes,
I think we should be, you know, listening to them.
Yes, at least give them an opportunity to come inside and express their concerns, like a town meeting, a council meeting, or something. Just hear their side, at least. Who appoints these five guys?
So they are appointed by the president.
Mm-hmm.
I believe historically it's usually a 3-2 split of whoever's
yes,
power, party is in power. But I'm not 100% sure on that.
Well, Drew, tell us, we must go. This has been exhilarating, depressing, inspiring, informative, educational. It's been all those things. But leave us with some final thought, how we can get in touch with you and your organization, what we can do, websites, whatever campaign you have going. Tell us.
My
pleasure.
I know we've talked about a lot of things that can seem overwhelming and depressing, and, you know, it's really sometimes scary to feel like these corporations have a lot of money and power and that we can't do anything about it. but the fact is that's not the case.
No.
We really can, and we need to come together and organize. And we're seeing victories all across the country against major fossil fuel infrastructure projects because, people understand that this is a trajectory we can't continue on.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to get our emissions under control immediately or, our is going to look vastly different, not just for children's lifetime, but in our lifetime.
Yes, yes.
This is now something that will affect us. So if you're in the Maryland, D.C., or Virginia region, check out ChesapeakeClimate.org. We are the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. We've got several really, really inspiring and visionary campaigns going on right now in both states. In Maryland, we're trying to bump up that renewable portfolio standard to 25% by 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Virginia, we're working on passing our Virginia Coastal Protection Act that would give Hampton Roads the financial resources it needs to protect itself from sea level rise. And possibly, another hurricane, God forbid, were to hit our vulnerable cities.
Yes.
We need to take action now, and we can do it. And we just need our fellow Virginians, Marylanders, fellow everyone to engage and really stand up and create the future we want to see.
Thank you so much, Drew, and you're absolutely right. Just give us slowly one more time that website.
Find us at ChesapeakeClimate.org. We're on Facebook at Chesapeake Climate Action Network.
And visit
Look
and
us up, contact us and get involved.
Exactly. Getting involved, stop being misdirected, get the right information and get involved. That's the message today. It's for all of us. Everyone alive today is being affected by this, and our children and grandchildren even more so. Think solar, think renewable. And thank you so much, Drew Gallagher, for being on the Reasonable Voices radio show today. I so appreciate the information you've shared with us. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Marcello. It was great to be on.
My pleasure, and I wish you, of course, all the best. You take care. Bye now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Stay with us, as we'll be right back with a final comment from the Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. In Spike Jonze's Her, we saw the Joaquin Phoenix character fall in love with Samantha, an artificial intelligence being who exists within his computer. Now, Alex Garland's thriller Ex Machina takes this premise further by adding to artificial intelligence both functional sensuality and physical beauty, a dangerous combination. Computer programmer Caleb has won the exciting reward of participating on a new top-secret project with his brilliant and secretive boss, Nathan, a man of limitless wealth and intelligence. He soon finds himself trapped in an experimental test to discover whether Nathan's artificial human is a real, dynamic-thinking being whose thoughts can evolve toward a purpose. In fact, Nathan's creation, Eva, is alluring in every way, especially to Caleb, as she has apparently been specifically designed to fulfill his most secret desires. As we soon learn, this is indeed dangerous stuff, as Caleb falls hard, unwilling to bear the isolating restrictions imposed upon his love. Eva has passed the test. Nathan has created a being, human or machine or both. She is beautiful, alluring, evolving, and strategically manipulative enough to entice the bait for whom she was designed. What, oh what, could go wrong? Ex Machina, not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the Reasonable Voices heard round the world. Transforming Hope. Despite anchor abuse of breaking news, exclusive report, and World War II vision-entrenched senators John McCain and Lindsey Graham, despite transforming political straw polls into a Romney good old moneybags club where cokeheads genuflect before the bronze bull, despite Citizens United supreme electoral transformation, despite non-voters and Americans too self-absorbed with handheld devices to avoid light poles, manholes, and train tracks long enough to notice P3's tax bankruptcy connection
transforming from white to black, or Bruce to Caitlin, and we're all a-Twitter. Though we're not transformed by Labour leadership chest-pounding over small temporary House TPP procedural vote, nor the male challenging by my favorite House grandmother, still, for one brief shining moment, when hope nourishes as it is nourished, each victory will help us some other to win. The reality is, on either side of the fast-track argument and both sides of TPP party aisle, few know enough to practice the necessity for making choices as global citizens without sacrificing Americans on the world stage. Hope is seeing a person as both his friends and enemies see him. Hope is a multiracial constitutional attorney with community organizer experience being overwhelmingly elected president. However, it's not hero worship, assigning divine powers to Reagan, or a candidate's smile that beckons us back to the future. But rather, hope for all Americans to embrace the privilege of automatic voter registration. When, during the slowest recovery in history from the worst recession in history, a black-looking president is re-elected, that's Main Street hopes trumping Wall Street billions. Proportionately, when congressional gridlocking, gerrymandering, and non-confirmations are set aside temporarily to embrace African-American president in favor of a mostly top-secret international trade deal, America's best hope demands we judge the motivations of the strange bedfellows keeping company behind closed doors. Hope inspires. The number of Americans duped by the derisive right are flushing rush-like hate down the slippery slope, realizing a House divided against itself doesn't stand a snowball's chance in Congress to intelligently solve 21st-century challenges. Hope is discovering the balance between transporting toxic fossil fuels through pipelines and over rails, by transforming American overconsumption of oil, gas, and nuclear energy into a nation basking in the renewable freedom of each sunrise, gentle breeze, and coal ash-free shower. Although aspirin knee-capped conservatives, duggered by hypocrisy of politically inconvenient family values and other non-patriot acts, still deny reality of forever digital video, those dishonoring law enforcement oath of honor to protect and serve star in street videos as violent antagonists for those smart enough to tap smartphones and aim like Michael Slager's weapon. Hopefully, our response, though Wall Street, Madison Avenue, and cable TV consumer dollar motivated, is finally veering toward all lives matter. Hope is what drills out the truth decay of Citizens United, giving hands up for families like those of Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, John Crawford III, Eric Garner, Freddie Gray, and all law-abiding police. Hope transforms us, like Second University of Virginia student accosted by Virginia ABC Armed Force, like Elizabeth Day in 2013, all charges dropped against Martise Johnson, Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe's appointed panel considers lack of need for an alcohol SS. Municipal court judge investigation reveals special justice for police injustice, decrees probable cause in the Cleveland Park Timothy Lohman shooting death of Tamir Rice. South Carolina grand jury indicts ex-police officer for the murder of Walter Scott. 10-year veteran Texas police corporal resigns after enforcing unnecessary force on bikini-clad female teenager post-pool party. Hope is Eric Casebolt will have his day in court. Hope is the love expressed to the families of all those lost all too soon, to bullying, to brain cancer, to Alzheimer's, and to the lies we tell ourselves about war and gun violence. Let us go forth together now in the hope of transparency. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.